and welcome to Tools in the Shed, a podcast powered by Cars Guide, ready to rip into car stuff that has caught our eye this week. I'm Cars Guide Deputy Editor James, and with me is Senior Journalist Richard.
Oh, hello.
And regular contributor Peter. Thank you both for being here. This week, we're looking at the next big thing, and it is big, from China, and how that wave continues to build into the Australian market. We'll look at some fresh metal in the Cars Guide garage, and we'll catch up with an alleged modern-day robber baron in this week's Must Watch, so stay with us. But first of all, some feedback. Last week, we were looking at hot hatches, and I think it was a Stephen Ottley story about should you be in the hot hatch market now or waiting because there's some interesting product coming down the pipeline. Look, Jim Danick, our old mate, agrees with you, Richard. Yes. And he believes, many motoring journalists, that the Hyundai i30N is the pick for performance and value and daily driving and all of that stuff. And Absolutely. He declares himself a Hyundai fanboy, so he's being quite transparent about that. He thinks, yeah, that Evergreen is probably a good description for the Golf. Maybe it's respectful of its place in history. His words, not mine, that it might be a little behind the times. Type R's too pricey. GR Yaris should keep all the manufacturers on their toes. And he points out that we got a pricing story from Chesto this week. So in New Zealand, the GR Yaris in Kiwi pesos is going to be $54,990, which is about $50,720 in Australia. So more than $50,000 for a GR Yaris is in prospect for this market.
Cheaper than I thought it was going to be.
Really?
Still too much. Yep. Still way
I was
too
thinking
much.
60. Well, given the size
you were thinking 60. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, 32 for a ZR hybrid. Outrageous
yep.
amount.
That is outrageous. That's too much money. No one's going to buy it.
Well, Jim also chimed in, and he caught the fact that we'd mentioned Winton last time around, and he said, memories and a smiley face. And it's worth pointing out that Jim is, of course, formerly a key cog in the Winton Motor Company machine. I think, Richard, remind me, he worked in the casting area and the engine plant, I think. He had a significant injury at one point. There was I think it was hushed up by HR.
He lost 9 of his fingers, JC, it was a horrific accident.
He does type one finger fast. That is his style.
Very
fast. But he has 8 fingers left though, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Well,
no, actually, what a lot of people don't know is that he cut his teeth doing the endurance rounds.
He cut his teeth
in
as well.
A Winton. He did. Wow. Doing the endurance rounds for
that
for
was
Winton.
Anyway,
that's right.
Lofty Visions says, top show as usual, guys, with a thumbs up. Thank you, Lofty. On Hot Hatches, have you guys heard any news on our great leader, the Musk's upcoming baby Tesla, supposedly to be priced around US$25,000 mark? Now, that would cause a bit of a stir in the hot hatch market. So stand by, Lofty, because we're actually going to touch on that in Muskwatch this week. So just hold that thought. Rico says, I think it's a pity that the Civic sedan didn't get the Type R treatment. The old JDM FD2 Civic was brilliant and beautiful in Type R, guys. And for our viewers on YouTube, we'll have a picture of that car. I've got to agree. With Rico, I think it is a beautiful car and it didn't make it here, although there may be some running around, private imports, etc. Yamal Kumarasuri says, hi guys, would the new WRX be in the Golf R Yaris GRMN segment? Now, first of all, I'd say that the GR is different to a GRMN. I think that's something that we're waiting for in a little while. The MN, GR stands for Gazoo Racing. And MN stands for Masters of Nürburgring. So it's like the next level up in terms of performance. But a WRX and a Golf R, I would have thought broadly, are competitive cars. What do you guys reckon?
Peter?
Look, there's always threats of the WRX breaking out of that kind of mid-tier kind of thing, but like that's what the STI is for, right? And it's
correct.
It's too big to be that kind of car. I don't think it's that kind of car at all. So, and I can imagine that the next WRX will be bigger and uglier again, and have the same engine, and have a terrible gearbox, and have an awful ride. And then the STI will somehow have a better ride and a better gearbox, but still
and look nothing
big.
Like the Visiv concept.
That's right. Absolutely nothing like it.
Ever since WRX lost its rival, the Lancer, It's never had to up its game. No. So there's been a vacuum that's been filled, you know, by i30s and whatnot. So
Well, I mean, even the Renault Sport Megane, it just kills it. It's so much more fun to drive.
Bertie chimed in with his two cents worth and says he loves his Mark 7 GTI. So he has a Mark 7 Golf GTI. No gremlins. The biggest plus, he reckons, is everyday usability. But he's not really excited by the Mark 8. Doesn't think it brings anything particularly new to the table. Talk about, you know, not evolving very far. And he even went as far as saying, what's the compelling reason to trade up? Even the new Tartan looks less GTI than the current Clark version.
I mean, he shouldn't be complaining too much. I mean, that means the resale value of his Mark 7 is going to be, you know, pretty good because the Mark 8 doesn't look too different. But that's a Volkswagen thing, isn't it, guys? Like, they make these tiny incremental changes, but they just refine and refine and refine. It's like when you're doing sanding, you just move up in a smoother and smoother grade until you get to a really polished product.
No, I actually get out the surfacer and just jam it in there and go straight to the final result. Yeah.
So while the Golf Mark 7 GTI is very, very good, it's just not, it's the same price as everything else that's better than it. That's the problem. Like, even the Megane, which is expensive, I think is more fun. And it's got all-wheel steer and all of that. Whereas the Golf's just like, no, we're good. We'll just stick with the old formula. And if you're not going to push on while everyone else is blowing past you, you're going to fall behind. It may still be a really good hatchback, and I think a lot of people buy the GTI because it's the top of the range and no other reason. But I just can't see why people are going to be attracted to it when it's just the same old, same old.
Right. Do you think it's been on a pedestal for too long that Volkswagen's just rolling the arm over, maybe?
Can I just say, Golf GTI fanboys are almost as obnoxious as Tesla fanboys. Like, they are super
That's a provocative
obnoxious.
Statement.
Yeah,
you're going to get it now.
Oh, I don't care. I've already got it. I mean, the absolute, you cannot say that anything is better than a Golf GTI. Absolutely nothing. You know,
check the comments for hate speech, everybody, I suppose. I mean, that's where we'll find it.
You could say the same about a Porsche 911 as well. The changes in that car over the last 10 years have been pretty incremental as well. So
I disagree. I mean,
what would you change, Peter, about the GTI?
What would I change about it? More power, more fun.
How would you put more fun into it?
Just make the chassis more playful.
You make it part of the contract.
Yeah.
When you sign on to buy one, you're going to have more fun.
The i30N is more fun to drive.
It's sharper.
More character.
It's not as refined, like in terms of the interior.
No, but I don't think people care about that. Honestly,
you're not going to cut yourself on any of the plastics in a Golf GTI.
I isn't that bad.
Well, I like the
i30N. I'm not pretending
the
i30Ns, but people who are looking for a hot hatch aren't super fun. I mean, people buy the Renault Sport Megane, and the quality on that is not exactly what you'd call, Audi. So, I just think that buyer isn't super fussed about the quality, but they're looking for something interesting to drive. And the fact
that's fair, I reckon. Yeah, good. Interesting. Yep. And maybe that's where the dichotomy is, that Volkswagen is focused on stuff that people no longer really care that much about. Or it's just two buyers, isn't it,
mate? Yeah. And look, when I say Golf GTI fanboys, I mean the kind of prick from an internet forum types, not people who just...
Right. All right, well, we'll leave that there. It'd be good to get people's further thoughts on all of that. But our old mate Hammer Ross, he's been, and in our comments, he's been a bit of a Defender fan, and he's been looking forward to this new one. But he said the pricing that dropped since we last sat down is where the good news stopped. He said he knew it had cost more than the previous model, but geez, not nearly twice the price. So you've got a spread of, for a 90 P300, that's the entry point at 71.5 before on-road costs. So that's your cheapest Defender. And you can go right up to a 110 in D300X for 135.5. So you're in that band above 75K up to 135 odd. He says Land Rover clearly sees the new Defender taking over the market that the current Discoveries failed to capture.
Yeah, well, Discovery's gone up market, hasn't it? It's more expensive than it used to be.
And the Defender has changed in character. It's a much slicker vehicle than that, iconic, historical, model that it replaced.
Yeah. True, but when was a Defender ever recently bought and used as it should be in a previous generation as well? I think they know their market very well. They're selling to florists and you know, people who have gourmet, you know, delivery businesses. It's not going to do the camel, you know, track tour across
That's a very narrow market, Richard. Gourmet delivery businesses. If you're pitching your vehicle there, boy,
you know what I mean.
Well, you're going to be Melbourne,
you are
going
to see it at the Chelsea Flower Show with Jamie Jury's name down the side of it. It's just it's a fashion accessory.
Now you know who bought the last Defender towards the end? It was the same sort of people who bought Saabs because they couldn't buy a Saab. So they were buying that design icon,
yes,
probably without driving it on the road, just discovering, oh, maybe this isn't cracked up to me. I've got a mate, like full-on hipster, beard, like fantastic bloke, but he owned a Defender, and he said, I didn't drive it that much, so I thought, it just wasn't that much. And he also had a Saab, believe it or not.
There you go.
Yeah, well, moving on, Birdie came in again, and we were talking about the Citroen C5 Aircross last week, and one of its highlights being its seats. Fantastic seats.
Oh, yeah.
And Bertie says, remember the plush Renault 16 seats from the early 1970s?
Oh,
magnifique. Yeah. Vive la France. look, my brother, my older brother, had a few Renault 16s, and that is one of the things I remember about that car is how unbelievably great the seats were. He's absolutely right. Do you guys, either of you had, you owned a Renault, Peter, at one point, didn't you?
I had a Renault Sport Clio, but my brother owned two Renault 12s.
Okay.
And the second 12, the Virage, with the four headlight front end, had those lovely tombstone seats. They were
beautiful.
So comfortable. Covered in, I guess it was Alcantara. And the Alcantara was good because it gripped your clothes. So when you turned a corner, because those things, they'd roll over like a Liberian oil tanker, you know.
Yeah.
And,
Peter enjoys having his clothes gripped.
Yes. Well, you have to in a Renault 12, otherwise you'd slide right out of the window.
Very, very easy to work on mechanically as well. My grandfather was a Renault fan, and he was terrible with engineering. But even he could take an engine out of a Renault, fix it, and put it back in again, all in his backyard with a tree.
They're meant for French farmers. They're meant, you know,
That's
it's
right.
Transport plus taking the pig to market on the weekend. Now, Bertie continues on saying, look, Richard, he picked up on your point last week from the Fortuna where you found the Bluetooth connectivity or the connectivity for CarPlay very fiddly. And he says, it's annoying, but it's also a safety issue because if that's on your mind and it's distracting you from what you're trying to do in operating the vehicle and being aware of what's around you, it is a bigger issue than it might seem on the face of it. So he definitely agrees.
Absolutely, absolutely. I had this issue where every time my wife called me in the Toyota that I was in, it actually disconnected the Bluetooth and the phone just rang on the seat beside me.
Yeah,
so I was like,
that's so annoying.
Oh, I can't touch the phone and she's ringing. I've got to pull over and then, you know, reconnect my phone, you know, that type of thing. And this is the thing. I mean,
you have a fight. It puts your relationship in jeopardy.
I'm avoiding her. Look, it's a Toyota and it's a Lexus thing. I end up, and this is the truth, and they're going to hate me saying this, I end up just not really using their media systems because it's just too much work. And they're messy, they're busy, they're difficult to get around. Yeah, that's one area they need to fix.
Lexus world, you're using the remote touch interface, which is probably the most hateful thing in the world.
Oh, no, there are worse. I think the Toyota head units are criminally bad for such a big company. There's no need for it.
But is it because obviously I've just got out of a Kia Sorento, which I'll talk about later, and the seamlessness of you know, Kia and also Hyundai's connectivity is amazing. You know, it connects to your phone before you even touch the door handle type of thing as you're walking over to it. It's brilliant. Is it because, I mean, Toyota's obviously getting a third party to come up with, you know, their headsets or their head units?
No, I think it's even lamer than that. I reckon they're just buying them off the shelf. So I've often...
JB Hi-Fi.
We're down to that level, I reckon. I've often joked that some accountants got smashed and bought 5 million units off Alibaba. Because the new one's slightly better, but the quality of the screen itself is shocking. It's like it's all stretched across. It's low res. There's no color depth.
Yep.
Step into a Kia. You step into a Kia Picanto, and the screen is miles better than in a $75,000 Corolla. It's just not good enough.
Right. Okay. So great point. Great point, Bertie. And we wholeheartedly agree. Let's see if has a relative that has the last model VW Jetta that was sold here. And strangely enough, they want to upgrade to another one, but of course it departed the scene in, I think, 2017, and asks, is there any chance that the Jetta would make a reappearance in this market? And I think that just goes to the fact that sedans full stop are kind of on the nose and in a terminal slide to Nowheresville, and the chances are exceptionally thin that that would ever happen. Do you guys agree?
Agreed.
I think so. I mean, look, it's hard to get a small sedan from the Volkswagen group. You know, Skoda does the Scala, but it's a hatch. Look, I mean, why not? Yeah. What is it? I would like to know, what is it about the Jetta that they really like that they can't get out of a hatch? Is it just because it's a sedan, or what is it?
Good point. Don't know. I mean, let's see if adds that when he was looking at that car and his relative's wife, and they were showing it off to him, and he said, well, you do know it's made in Mexico. And he said, if looks could kill. So he's a bit cheeky there. Now, Neza, on the same...
Do they even make the Jetta in right-hand drive anymore? Sorry, James.
Okay, well, there you go. That's a massive tick in the impossible column there. So Neza, he on that same theme, says he believes sedans will truly die out when taxis, police, government, and businesses in general move away from them. He's in Tassie, and he says that over there, they're using 2014 Honda Jazz hybrids as taxis, which was a shock to the senses when he first arrived.
They've got very good seating. They've got plenty of leg room.
Surprisingly
big boots.
They're a packaging miracle, the Jazz and the HRV.
Have you done the, what's the, you know, they've got, they call it magic seating, but have you done the one, if you go through the manual, it tells you all the different types of seating arrangements you could do. Have you done the one where you put the front seat back and you sit in the back seat and you put your legs over the top of the front seat and they call it the refresh mode?
Yeah. And all it is, refresh mode.
It's just a Japanese Honda executive, like complete bullshit. You're just sitting in the back seat with your legs over the front seat. They do that in all cars.
It's Hightower from Flying Hot Police Academy.
Well,
that's where they got the idea, because that was a Honda Civic that they ripped that seat out.
There you go.
You sense there's just a touch of opportunism there. Oh, look, you can do this. Let's call it, what was it? Relax mode.
Relax mode. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, Grudlin74 finished it off with the comments. He says he believes the death of sedans is not far away. And really, it's about EVs and there being two schools of thought, like hatches and SUVs. In terms of non-commercial vehicles, efficiency is no longer just about A to B commute. It's the space that we occupy while doing it. And he thinks sedans are very space inefficient. And that Lofty Visions responded to that and said another sedan bit the dust recently in Australia, which, of course, is the Liberty. And we ran the story this month that as of, later part of this year and early next year, we won't have the Liberty anymore. And it's been an absolute part of the scenery in the Australian landscape for so long, and it'll be gone.
But I mean, sedans have been on this. I mean, really, when you think about it, like the Liberty RS was kind of the hero car of the 90s, and you can't get a sedan in that size with that kind of oomph anymore.
No.
So it's like, it's not just that the market shrunk, it's that the appeal for car makers to make them interesting has also shrunk, which is probably accelerating their demise.
I reckon we're going to go full circle, because if you have a look at the very first cars that came out in 1890s, which were based on horse and buggies, we're going to end up with four giant wheels and an open top, and you just climb in and there's no boot. We've just realized we had it right the first time. Yeah, totally right. They were the original. We started with SUVs because they were off-roaders, because their roads were terrible. We're just going to go all the way back. We got it right the first time.
Richard, I don't agree. But anyway, that's a very interesting point of view.
You what? It's going
to
happen.
But we will move on from there to our main topic of conversation for this week, which is ostensibly around one car's coming arrival, but also points to a slightly larger conversation about the continuing wave of success, or the wave of new models and the success that they're enjoying in Australia, the cars coming from China. And we ran a Chesto-authored story this week about a new product from MG that's called the Gloster. And it first saw light of day earlier this year at an auto, a thing called Auto Expo in India, earlier on. It's more powerful than a Prado, more tech-savvy than a Fortuner, according to Chesto, but it's a ladder-frame, seven-seat, all-wheel-drive SUV. So, and it will come in at a keen price, you'd have to think. So just to put some context on this, MG, so far this year, the HS is doing 250-odd a month. The MG3 is up 70% year-on-year. The ZS is doing well. That's a relatively recent arrival. And in a market that is down 20% year-to-date, new car market in Australia, LDV's up close to 10%. Great Wall is up 22%. MG's up 60%. And Havel is up close to 100%. Yeah. While all the established brands are, some of them are doing well to just tread water and stay in station, others are suffering very badly. The Chinese brands have found their time.
I think that's right.
But I think there's a key kind of point to consider here. One of them is that one of the reasons Toyota is down 20-25% is that the commercial market has tanked. So Hilux is down, vans are down, that kind of thing. And that's, you know, that's a big chunk of Toyota sales. And that's no criticism of either of those vehicles. It's just that nobody's buying them. Yeah. Whereas the MG stuff, it's all private.
Yeah.
People are going and putting their hands in their own pockets. They're not looking for, you know, government rebates or any of that. It's not for their job. People are going and buying private cars from MG. And that is, you know, that's why the MG3 is up so much. And it, like, off a low base is a backhanded way of saying, well, they were crap to start with. But they were doing all right last year. So
they were. That's the thing.
The rise is more than just coming off a low base. I think it's just quite, it's more stark because of the tanking in the market. But I think those numbers would be consistent even if the market was still blazing away like it was in the last few years.
Yeah.
Do you think as well that it's they're offering such an affordable price?
Yeah, it's so cheap. I mean, the MG3,
There's always going to be a part of the market that will take the bait when you're offering a very attractive price.
I'm looking at those sales in the light vehicle class. MG3, 654 for the last month. And the nearest competitor is Kia Rio at 445. So 654 compared to 445. They are smashing it.
Well, I suppose what's worth saying is that in that part of the market where people are possibly buying their first new car, there's less chance that they're going to be rusted on loyal to a particular brand.
That's right.
Absolutely. Much at all as you'd like to start young car buyers on the ladder of your brand, at that point, they're probably ready to look anywhere. They don't have much prejudice in terms of I'm against this brand or for that one, and they're much more open to the idea of a car like an MG at a really aggressive price.
Well, look at the competition. Mazda 2, all over 20 grand.
Yep.
Yaris starts at 21.1 with a stripped out manual.
Yep.
You've got the Rio, which is great, but it was just being turned over to the new model. What else is kicking around?
Picanto.
Picanto. So Picanto is the only real kind of solid low price.
And it's a great little car.
It is so good. Yep. I mean, I always point people towards the GT, especially if they're happy to drive a manual.
It's huge, why wouldn't you? It's great.
But MG is throwing an automatic at a market that wants it for a good price. They look shiny and new when you walk into them. The dealerships look good. It's a brand that probably their parents, because they're going to be my age and Richard's age, you know, for a lot of these people, if they're not going young, they're like, hey, it's a great brand when I was a kid, you know.
Yeah.
So, even though they've got no idea who owns them now.
MG is shamelessly playing on that heritage and saying MG since 1924. and all of that stuff.
Even in terms of the naming of this new SUV, which is the Gloster, which is named after the Gloster Meteor, which was the very first Royal Air Force, a British Air Force jet fighter to fly in World War II.
Only jet plane to fly in World War II.
That's right. I was watching videos of it this morning because I'm a nerd. And seriously, if you saw this thing flying over a battlefield, you would be like, me, what the heck is that? Of course, because it goes...
And the noise, yeah.
And it's just like brilliant. Like, meanwhile, you've got other planes going. You can see them. It's incredible. So, yeah, they know what they're doing in terms of their naming.
Yes.
If you had have asked me about a year ago, I'd say no way. There's no way it can take off. But I think if they price this Gloster at a low enough price, you are going to get people buying it because it looks good.
Yep.
It's the only SUV in this market at this minute price point to have a 12.3-inch media display. 12.3-inch media display. It's enormous.
And a big sunroof. All those things. Yes. It was like when Great Walls started to first come into the market and they had leather. You know, in your starting model, it sort of threw things out of whack in terms of expectations.
What
should be included in a base model car?
Yeah, what the Chinese are going to do here is they are going to completely dazzle younger buyers with the most modern tech, really cool styling, all these value for money features like leather seats, and they'll throw it head up displays. Yeah. Meanwhile, you've got Prado, which looks like it's straight out of 1999. They are going to Toyota. Don't know what's going to happen, but I think they're
Chesto dug around and he at this point believes there'd be a choice of engines, but that it would launch with a 2-litre twin turbo diesel, which would be good for 162 kilowatts and 480 newton metres.
Yes.
And an all-wheel drive system. That makes it more powerful than Fortuna, Prado, or the 5-cylinder Everest.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be a bit of a march on the market. 8-speed auto.
Yep.
And the 12.3-inch screen you mentioned, Richard.
Yep.
A big panoramic sunroof, digital driver display.
Yep.
Ventilated
front seats, collision up warning.
On it's autonomous got... parking. We've got some footage of that as well, that it'll do the parking trick. And it's about 5 meters long, so it's a decent sized beast with 7 seats.
People are going to buy it. I mean, I think the brand snobbery, which existed, in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, is going. I think.
Yep.
I think people are going to are buying with their eyes. It's going to sell. I know it is. Yeah. Really is.
Well, the thing is, it's for the Indian market at this stage, and it's going to cost the equivalent of $75,000 Australian dollars in India. The specification may well be different by the time it comes here. But you'd think it's only a matter of time. I reckon it's a no-brainer for MG to move from the smaller hatch-type vehicles into something like this.
Easily. Well, India has just lost Toyota Prado because of fuel regulations over there. So this is coming in to fill that vacuum. And so they're going to love it. The Indians are pretty happy with it because it's got ventilated seats and it's a really big feature over there. They want luxury SUVs, which have got all those, plush features. So it'll sell their
It's broadly based on the LDV D90, which is a known quantity here. Mm. So it wouldn't be kind of breaking as much ice as you'd think. That there's already been a little bit of groundwork laid in terms of acceptance for this kind of vehicle from China.
Absolutely. Number of LDV, vehicles that you're seeing on the streets, tradies are getting into the utes. They're all, it's accepted. It's, good. Yeah. The only thing that's going to stop it would be a war with China, but I don't think that's going to happen.
Fine, not if we've got anything to do with it.
The Herald Sun would like a war.
Yeah.
So we'll leave that there. It would be nice to know if people would be, tempted by a vehicle like the Gloster. Is that something that you could see yourself choosing rather than a Prado? That's got so much kind of following in this market. Be interesting to know.
What I think is interesting about that part of the market, sorry, just to finish off,
go for it.
Is that I think that part of the market is quite happy to dip its toe into something new. The big SUV market has been happy, took on the Isuzu brand with great enthusiasm, which at the time it got kicked off was not really a known quantity for that kind of car.
Yeah.
As you say, they bought Great Walls, they bought LDVs. People buy SsangYongs.
Yes.
It's not like people are brave in that segment, which I think is really interesting.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway.
That is a good point. Now, thank you for that, guys. And as I say, I'd love to hear people's thoughts on all of that. But Richard, we're going to move to our garage now.
Yes.
And we're going to start with you. And for the second week in a row, you've been driving, testing, reviewing a very significant vehicle. So tell us about it, please.
I have been driving because we don't have proper launches at the moment because of COVID-19, the launches are being done in a different way. We're picking the cars up. We're sitting through a sort of a webinar, and the Kia Sorento has just turned over to its new generation model. So I've been driving the new generation Kia Sorento. I've had it a week. I've put about 200 Ks on the clock. There's a video on YouTube and the Cars Guide website at the moment. The Sorento has always been a benchmark for that seven-seat SUV market in terms of value for money, in terms of the way it drives and practicality. You can read the review, but they've done it again. They've just made it. They've made it better.
Better.
I'll start with the bad points. The bad points are the engines. They still offer pretty much they're the same engines. I mean, the diesel now has an aluminium block rather than a cast iron one, but it's still the same capacity and the outputs are the same. The fuel economy is a little bit better. The alternative to that is a V6 petrol, and we didn't drive that one. We drove the diesel and we drove the top of the range GT line. Look, the V6 is going to be really thirsty. It would have been so much better for a car that feels this modern and that looks this stylish to have had a turbo petrol high output four cylinder like that's in the Mazda CX-9. It just would match this car completely. Yep. Instead, we've got these engines which are pretty old and pretty thirsty.
But then on the plus side of the ledger, there's so much
On the plus side of the ledger, look,
what a car.
Safety is fantastic, but I've got to point out that the airbags don't fully cover the third row. Then again, those third row seats still aren't, not your Kia Carnival seats. They are temporary or,
jump seats.
Occasional jump seats, that's right.
Right.
But the top of the range GT line just gets oodles and oodles of technology. We were talking about connectivity before, and what they've got up front is a 10.25-inch screen, and it's the best media display I have ever used, from the styling to the icons to even when you're not in sat-nav. Look, on sat-nav, there's this streetlight mode, so you might just have it off, and it just follows where you're going on the screen.
Oh, that's great.
And it's really non-intrusive. It just shows you your street and the side streets, and it's so clever.
Is very, very similar to the central screen in the BMWs.
That kind
of vibe. But it's really handy. I was thinking, why is it like this? But it's because you can see little side streets if you need to do a quick rat run. It's so good.
The diesel has now got a dual clutch. It's a wet clutch, and it's superb. It's not as fast shifting as say a DSG from Volkswagen, but it's seamless in terms of that low speed bumper to bumper traffic. It's so good.
And diesel is all wheel drive. Petrol's front wheel drive.
That's it. So if you want all wheel drive, you're going to have to go for the diesel. Or petrol's a front wheel drive. Look, you can watch the review, but I've got to say it's got one standout feature, and that's, again, on the top of the range car, and it's able to park itself in and out of spots. Now, you're thinking, that's not new, right? Volkswagens, Audis have all got the self-parking feature, but this parks itself when you're not in the car. So how it works is you arrive at your parking spot and the cars on either side have just parked too closely for your whole family to get out. When you've parked it. So you get out of the car before you've parked it, and then on your key fob, it's like a remote control, and there's a forward and a reverse button. You press the forward button and it steers itself into the spot. And so it uses the sensors and the steering to actually get itself in. And it works the reverse as well. So you get back to your spot and someone's parked you in. So you press it in reverse. You can automatically start the car so you don't have to get in it from the key fob, and then press the reverse button, and it will navigate its way out of there as well.
It's amazing.
It's brilliant.
It's kind of along the road to a Tesla summon thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
But,
where you're getting the car to do what you want without being in it.
Exactly. And it probably won't
launch
right.
itself into an
And old on a completely subjective level, I think Inside and Out, it looks fantastic. I does, love the way it looks. I really do. They've done a does. Great job.
They've completely changed the look of it. The last one was a bit bloated, you know, a little Fusty bit like looking, I was it? A couple of years ago. And it has, just like me, it's lost a little bit of weight. And, it, you know, well, unlike me, it looks a lot better. prices have gone up about $3,000. So it tops out at the GT line for about $63,000 and begins... Yep. In the 40s as well for the lower grade models. So it's a good thing, a really good thing.
I would say don't ignore that bottom of that entry level car because you don't get the big screen, you don't get a lot
of stuff. So step up from the sport. Yeah, from the sport upwards. It's just so good. I highly recommend it.
I've done a few miles in that same car and I am so impressed with it.
I would also highly recommend people watch Richard's video. It is a cracker. Definitely. So there you go. Now, early on, we had Bertie talking about Renault 16 seats and how good they were. But Peter, you've been in a French vehicle, current model, a different brand, but fill us in.
So Peugeot 3008, which I have a soft spot for, you know, just from the get-go. I had one for 6 months for Cars Guide in the diesel GT line. I had the petrol GT line, and I've got to say, everything I loved about that car is even better in the GT line petrol. Even though it's a bit slower, it's just a nicer engine. It's got that turbo petrol. It's just a nicer car to drive, and I just like the Sorento. It's gorgeous to look at. It's a real piece of art. Someone actually said, "Is that the new Evoque?" I went,
"Wow,
that's probably pushing it a bit much." But has that really? Yeah. Really nice styling to it. It doesn't, you know, because some SUVs, but they all look the same. So the Peugeot's got this really nice detailing, all those metallic features, and the inside is just so cool. I know Richard hates the iCockpit driving style, but that's because he's 9 meters tall. So definitely that's what Richard says. I really like it, and it's just such a lovely. Like the media system could do with work still. You have to sometimes when you know, you've got your phone plugged in, but you've got to actually pull it out of the USB and put it back in. Little niggly things like that still happen, but I'm still in love with the 3008. I just think it's lovely. But
fantastic.
The only more comfortable seats I've driven in the last couple of months were in the C3 Aircross, which has fantastic seats from the
cat. I love it.
Yeah.
Peter, tell me, does the instrument cluster have the Taco and Speedo as those, like, those rings that rotate?
So it's you got multi-choice. So you can slip through. And I really like it when it starts up. It does this kind of funky animation and you can click through it and it animates into the next thing rather than just going click. The next time.
I forget which car designer it was. I apologize. That said, screens and lights are the new chrome.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Kind of bling is what's engaging people with car design.
Yeah,
and Peter, what about the
doesn't it?
What about the shifter in it? You feel like you're holding the muzzle of a greyhound, though.
How often do you hold the muzzle of a greyhound?
I'm holding one right now, actually.
It is a little.
Yeah.
Bit
what
like
about
that.
The greyhound?
Now, say it. Now, I don't mind it, but my wife doesn't like that shifter, so it's split down the middle in this house.
Right.
We've broken Richard.
All right. Now, look, I'll finish off the garage entries with the Audi TT, which is a car I haven't been in for a while, for whatever that's worth, but it's the 45 TFSI Quattro S line. Nice. So that's best part of $80,000 before you put it on the road. And the car that we've had is white, a very striking white colour. People on YouTube will be able to see some pics. So it's 2-litre turbo 4, 6-speed dual clutch and all-wheel drive, of course, with the Quattro. 169 kilowatts, 370 newton meters, which is plenty for a little car like that. Yeah. And on the plus side, I had the seats are terrific. They're not French-style seats. What I'm trying to say is they're very grippy and supportive without being uncomfortable. They're super good in that regard. The ergonomics, the performance, it really gets along pretty rapidly. It's really urgent in its performance. The dynamics, the quality, and the value, I would say, because even at that money, it is getting on for half the price of a TT RS. And I reckon in day-to-day driving, it's just about all the TT you're going to need.
Can I mention something?
Yep.
Safety, JC, safety. Oh. No AEB.
Fine. That's in my negative column. You just you read my mind.
Sorry.
Number one in the minus column, no AEB.
Yes,
also, the rear seats, it's called a plus two.
No way.
Yeah. You with the best will in the world, you can't get real people into those back seats. They're not real. Yeah. The multimedia in the instrument cluster, I'm not convinced by that. That you're choosing media things and whatever in the middle of the instrument display in front of you. I'm not a fan. Others may be. I don't particularly enjoy that setup. Cabin storage was pretty thin on the ground. There wasn't a lot of places to put things easily. And despite a hill hold function, I did suffer a bit of rollback occasionally with the dual clutch, which I find disconcerting. So, but overall, I reckon even at that money, relative to the RS, which of course is a real powerhouse, but this car was heaps of fun to drive during the week. I really enjoyed it.
And I think that car is more livable than the RS.
The RS is full on.
Yeah, you've got to be ready for that. It's more a special event kind of car, you know, when you really want to go off and have a drive. One you can live with more.
I mean, I love the 5-cylinder in the RS. It's my favorite Audi engine.
Isn't it a great engine?
Great. But the RS is, I reckon, you got to be committed to have that car.
Super committed.
Well, speaking of being super committed, it's time for Must Watch.
Oh, yeah.
But do you mean committed in a lunatic asylum?
Legal sense.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Now, first of all, you'll remember Lofty Visions in the feedback that we covered off earlier asked us about what's happening with the Tesla hot hatch. And pretty recently, in the not too dim distant past, on Twitter, there was some reaction to Volvo buying a Model Y. They bought it in July, and there was much, Volvo's trying to copy Tesla, or gee, they need to deconstruct this vehicle. But in the commentary on that in Twitter, a person, Janius Kapkan, said Model Y is still too big for some cities in Europe. What about a smaller European-style hatchback? And Elon chimed in and said, probably a good one to design and engineer in Germany. Because, of course, the Gigafactory in Berlin is being built as we speak. It's probably pretty close to being finished off. So Electrek, the website Electrek, reminded us that Elon's been discussing designing cars where they're building them. So in China, for example, he's built new factories and he wants to design cars in China for China primarily. So he's seeing the German Berlin factory as, not just a place to build cars, but he's said that he's going to set up a design studio, a European design center in Germany as well. So it got me digging around for what might be out there already. And I found on Pinterest this mob called Yanko Design. I reckon go to their website. It's really a pretty interesting place to visit. And a particular designer called Dijan Hristov has come up with a whole series of what he's calling Model C renders for a prospective small hot hatch style Tesla. He says, I love me a hatchback and I love me a Tesla. And this is what he's been designing. And I just reckon they're fantastic. It's obviously easy to make a car look great when you're not constrained by bean counters telling you that, that's not doable for the price. But he's got all glass top. He's got motorized oversized side doors that slide forward, 60s concept car style, really cool.
107 style, yeah.
Exactly. So we've got some pictures up for people watching on YouTube, but if you're not, head to Yanko Design and have a look because I reckon they're amazing.
JC and Peter, I think we should contact Elon and say, look, come to Australia, build a factory here and build a car for Australians.
Well, he's got Yu Yangs. I mean, Infast just bought Lang Lang, so he can buy
Yu Yangs. He's intimidated by Winton.
He's intimidated.
He knows that there's no chance.
What about a panel van? What about a Tesla panel van?
The Tesla
Pete. Yeah.
Well, there was that woman in the States that made the Tesla Ute, yeah? Model 3 Ute, which was pretty good.
It was, yeah, yeah.
But also on Twitter, a person called Robert Reich, who our US listeners may be aware of, was on the Twitters. He's Chancellor's Professor of Public Policy at the University of California at Berkeley. He was a Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration. He's written 17 books. He's all over it. He's a big voice in public policy. So he tweeted, Tesla forced all workers to take a 10% pay cut from mid-April until July. In the same period, Tesla's stock skyrocketed and CEO Elon Musk's net worth quadrupled from $25 billion to over $100 billion. Musk is a modern-day robber baron. Just came right out with it. Elon came back and said, all Tesla workers also get stock, so their compensation increased proportionately. You are a modern-day moron.
Yeah, says the guy who called him pedo online.
Yeah, I just thought that was awesome. And everybody piled in. Turnell Henry says, in other news, companies don't care about workers as long as they generate profit. Also, water is wet. So that's a fair call.
Yeah,
but Lee Volrath said, how exactly is the rise and fall of a stock price supposed to make up for forced closures impacting cash flow that covers pay? The two are not directly related. The fact the company stayed healthy improved their job security better than other employers. Mm. Now, there were some accusations that people had been let go from Tesla just before they reached their work birthday threshold, where shares would have vested and all of these things. So there's allegations of some dodgy behavior in downsizing the workforce. But Doc Holliday came out with a fantastic GIF meme of Shaq when he was playing for the LA Lakers, slam dunking on Chris Dudley, who was a player for the New York Knicks, and just pushing him into the ground. So really, they're saying Elon did a slam dunk on Robert Reich, and I think they're probably pretty right.
So this is really standard behavior of Silicon Valley douche bro companies.
Totally.
So, you know, years ago, I worked for a large Silicon Valley company that had a lot of money. They used to get you to lend them money when you went traveling. So it's like, here's a credit card, but credit card. So if we don't pay it, that's on you. Yeah. But also, they gave you these stock options, which vested over a certain period of time. And when I got to my first tranche, they went, oh, no, you didn't start in August. You started in December. And then between August and December, the stock price tanked. So I lost any gain I got out of it. And I'm not the only one. And this is just standard Silicon Valley nonsense. It's garbage. I mean, I'm happy to put my hands up and say I'm an old lefty. But to say that stock options is part of your compensation is rubbish. It might be for someone like, you know, the CEO, because they're already getting a ton of money.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at someone like Qantas's Alan Joyce. Oh, he gets paid $28 million a year. Well, he doesn't, but a big chunk of that is stock options. That is not compensation. It's like the bonus I used to get when I worked for OneTel, which was just given if the manager felt like it. It meant they didn't have to pay as much super. So that stuff's rife and it's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, interesting.
Get off my horse now.
Also on Twitter, in a more conventional style, if there is such a thing for the dear leader, he tweeted, à la guerre comme à la guerre, which translated from French is in war as in war. Now, I couldn't find an attribution for that anywhere particularly.
Forrest Gump.
But Arnold Mahuza said, in response, Arnold Mahuza said, you all right? Sometimes it's all right to listen. You'll be shocked to find that there's always sense amidst all the chaos. Cheers. And then Fernando said, Elon, did you say you like pizza with extra cheese? And Crack Daddy of Cam
Crack
came
Daddy
in with,
awesome.
Elon on some shit. So, but the share price is pretty telling. It's, as we speak, $366.28.
Oh, that's down a lot.
When I checked in on it just in the last 12 hours or so. And it was $447.37 last week. So it's down about 18%.
Yeah.
And it was down 20% or $82 billion on Tuesday. So there are a few reasons for that. According to IG website and their author, Shane Walton, there's general market weakness, particularly across tech stocks. Apple's down 15%, Microsoft's down 10%, Amazon's down about 9%. So there's that. But also, Tesla's exclusion from the S&P, the Standard & Poor's 500, came as a bit of a surprise. And the committee that determines these things apparently quoted the stock volatility. They didn't want such a volatile stock in their batch of 500 stocks to determine the index. And also competition concerns, because GM announced its stake in Nikola to help Nikola produce the Badger. So all of a sudden, the competition is getting a little more real.
Great. Lucid Motors is in as well.
Exactly. But year to date, Tesla is still up about 300%, year on year.
Let's just do a quick market capitalization reminder. Even with that tanking price, it's at $346 billion.
Yeah.
Toyota, which is arguably a much safer stock, is at $217 billion.
That correction may have some way to go. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I think so too. And look, to think that Tesla itself is actually worth that much more when it just makes the cars, like if it was licensing its battery tech out to everyone, it'd be worth that.
Yeah.
I think a big chunk of that is investment analysts not doing as much homework as they should be on autonomous driving. And they are drinking the Tesla Kool-Aid we're going to be the leaders in autonomous driving. That's my view.
Exactly. It's the price of the hype. That's the share value of the hype. It's very high.
Yeah. But look, with that, I think we have reached the finish line. I want to say thank you, Peter. And
my pleasure.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. Thank you.
And thanks to our digital truth bomb, director of first impressions and slave to the rhythm, Mr. Pritchard, for his prowess on the buttons and sliders. Today, he's wearing a T-shirt saying, "I'm not a doctor, but I'll take a look anyway." Pants marked police line, do not cross, and 24-carat gold genie shoes. Absolutely amazing.
I always look forward to what Pritchard is wearing.
Yeah.
Please pass on the word about the podcast and let us know your thoughts by searching for Cars Guide on Facebook and Instagram using the hashtag CGPodcast, or email us at comments@carsguide.com.au. If you're an Apple Podcast listener, please rate and review us. And remember, you can watch us on YouTube. But before we go, one of my neighbours is a bit odd, and he proved it yet again this week. I sensed some commotion out on the street a couple of nights ago, and sure enough, there were several police cars out there. So as I got closer to have a look, I overheard one of the cops talking to my neighbour, and I heard the cop say, "Seen anything unusual?" The neighbour said, "A dolphin with a cigar once." And the cop said, "I mean around here." The neighbour said, "No, they live in the water."
That was very good. That was very...
Excellent setup.
That's fantastic.